Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Starting this week, high school students across Massachusetts are taking a new standardized test. It's called MCAS 2.0, and it's a hybrid of the state's highly regarded MCAS, which first debuted in 1998, and the newer Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers, or PARC test. Key thing about the PARC test, it's aligned with the National Common Core Standards, which Massachusetts recently adopted. Now, MCAS 2.0 has its supporters and its detractors, and among its detractors most powerfully, the Massachusetts Teachers Association, which is pushing for legislation to stop all high-stakes testing for 3 years. They're calling for a moratorium. We'll hear more from them in a moment. But first, we're joined by Commissioner of Elementary and Secondary Education from Massachusetts, Mitchell Chester. Commissioner Chester, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Meghna, I'm pleased to be with you.
It's great to have you. So first of all, you know, give us the headline here, or a little deeper into the headlines. What's different about the new MCAS? What makes it MCAS 2.0?
Sure. So we've upgraded a test that's 20 years old at this point. We've actually been giving the first generation, the legacy test, for 20 years now. And we know a lot more about what it takes to succeed for a young person who's in elementary school to be ready for middle school work, a middle school student to be ready for high school work, and a high school student to be ready for the world after high school. And that involves reasoning, thinking critically, communicating clearly, applying your math skills, being able to do research to compare and contrast multiple perspectives. And our next generation test, which we're giving for the first time this spring, does in fact put a lot of emphasis on those critical skills.
Okay, so but more specifically, you know, how different is it from MCAS, or how different is it from the Common Core aligned PARC test? I mean, we were promised a hybrid. Is it 50-50?
Well, it differs by grade and subject, but it's roughly 50-50. It's very much our test. It's been designed by Massachusetts educators each step of the way. They've reviewed all of the items, all of the test specifications, what we call a blueprint for the test. And so our teachers have made sure that this assessment is very much aligned with our learning goals in Massachusetts and not somebody else's assessment. And it's an evolution. It's an evolution from what was a very successful, very high-quality 20th-century test to one that's now a 21st-century assessment.
Mm. Now, the state gave various districts the option to, in the run-up to the new MCAS 2.0, to either keep administering MCAS or to administer PARC. And I'm seeing that roughly half the school districts that had elected to take the PARC exam have actually been reporting poor experiences in their first tries at it, either with the technological requirements, because it's a computerized test, or with the actual content itself. So do we have a problem here?
Well, that's very different than the feedback I've gotten, Meghna. So I'm not sure where you're getting your information, but we've gotten very positive feedback on the assessment. In fact, taking the test in a digital environment is a qualitatively different experience for students. It's interactive. There's video. There's audio. Students are able to manipulate on the screen. And students overwhelmingly have told us that they prefer the digital environment. Often it's the anxiety of adults that far eclipses a student's ability to deal with the digital environment. So we've gotten very positive feedback, but we've certainly listened to some of the concerns, including the mechanics of giving a test in a digital environment, and we've made upgrades and tried to address all of the concerns that we've heard.
Mm. Well, Mitchell Chester, if you'll stand by here for just a moment, I want to turn to possibly one of the most powerful or outspoken critics of this new test, and that comes from the Massachusetts Teachers Association. The MTA has actually backed legislation to put a 3-year moratorium on high-stakes testing across the state. We spoke a little earlier with Barbara Mataloni. She is the head of the MTA, and I asked her what her concerns are with this new version of MCAS.
The concerns that we have for the new tests are the same as the concerns that we had for the old test. The use of high-stakes testing to determine student learning, to assess the quality of teaching, and to assess what's happening in schools and districts is entirely and completely off the mark and really uses the smallest, most meaningless measure of teaching and learning and puts enormous value on it.
I take your point that the MTA's focus is on testing as a whole, so Let's really drive a little harder at that question then. I mean, look, many people would say that following the 1993 ed reform law in this state, one of the reasons why Massachusetts public schools are held to be amongst the best in the nation is that not only did the state decide to put more money into schools after 1993, but they wedded that with higher standards and accountability, and MCAS was a big part of that, that it was the way to measure whether or not schools were meeting the new standards. So rather than saying that it was the smallest, most meaningless measure, people would say it was a very meaningful measure. It's the way that we could tell that Massachusetts schools were getting better to the point that we see them today, again, lauded amongst the best in the nation.
I would say that what happens is what you assess becomes what you value. And what makes Massachusetts schools wonderful are not our high test scores. When you talk to parents and when you talk to students and you talk to educators about what makes a school great, they actually don't talk about testing. There are much more complex nuances of community and relationship and creativity and opportunity and challenges that are what makes schools wonderful.
Your point's taken on that because, you know, within each individual classroom, I think most people would absolutely agree with you. But what about when we look sort of at the macro level? Multiple times before when you've been on the show, we've talked about, say, the achievement gap across different groups, different regions of the state. A lot of people look at standardized testing as one way to measure how significant the achievement gap is, where the gap actually exists, and really allow educators to focus more like a laser on closing those specific areas where there is a gap. How else would we do that if not for testing?
I think one of the things about teaching and learning, about education, is that it is distorted to the degree that we impose efficiency models on it. And so any question that we have about what's happening in our schools and our districts really needs to allow for more complexity and less efficiency. Just like democracy, it needs to allow for more voices, for more perspectives, for an analysis of a wide range of considerations. And the same, I think, especially holds true within the context of looking at institutional racism. We're not going to solve the question of racism through testing and that kind of data. We're actually going to solve the question of racism by building relationships, by making spaces for people to have real conversations about the way that racism and whiteness impacts the experiences that young people are having in school. There's not an efficient way to do that. And in fact, the testing, you know, it's resegregated our schools because the thing we know about testing is that it's most highly correlated with the income of families. So why are we using this instrument to sort of prove that we have a problem with economic and racial justice? And instead, why don't we say, what are the real ways we need to attend to ourselves in community? That's like a harder question to answer. But we haven't done, testing hasn't done that. It hasn't helped us with that. In fact, it's exacerbated it.
Well, you mentioned the messy work of democracy. I mean, one view of how Massachusetts arrived at MCAS 2.0 is that it was kind of a democratic process. The state, of course, had a huge amount of input. There were many teachers and parents on various working committees. And that's why we have this MCAS 2.0 kind of compromise. So why not accept that this messy outcome, which may not be exactly what the MTA wants, is nevertheless the best for the state?
First of all, I don't think I'm just speaking for the MTA, and I do not feel that it was a deeply democratic process because the question was never asked, what are some other ways that we could consider assessing what's happening in our schools? There was only one question which asked, which test do you want to use? And as an example of how like undemocratic this process is, we have a movement of parents and educators who are working to resist high-stakes testing, and some of them are wanting to opt their students out of the high-stakes testing, which is entirely and completely legal in Massachusetts. Districts have to give the test, but individuals don't have to take the test. When we queried the commissioner recently about this policy because of inconsistent information that parents were receiving, his message to us was really punitive and had implications of illegality and threats that were stunning to me in terms of how undemocratic it was.
But specifically what?
Specifically, he implied in his memo that it is illegal. That's what principals and superintendents have been telling parents, and it's patently false. It is not illegal. Here are people saying, we have a question, and the response is to shut people down. That it is so troubling to me that that is the response to this. Instead of, geez, maybe we have something here we should be talking to.
Barbara Mattaloni is president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
We spoke with Barbara Mattaloni a little earlier today. Let's turn back to Mitchell Chester, Commissioner of Elementary and Secondary Education. Mitchell Chester, Barbara Mattaloni made a quite strong assertion there at the end, implying that you've said that it's illegal for parents to opt out of having kids take MCAS 2.0 or any of these statewide standardized tests. What's your response to that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I haven't used the word illegal. There is no provision to opt out. Parents have in the past had their students refuse to take the test. There are parents who have refused to allow their students to take the test. That's always been part of the landscape. I would offer a couple of comments on Barbara Mattaloni's statements. First of all,
but hang on though, just let me jump in here, because I'm seeing a March 6th memo where you said that neither the Commonwealth nor Congress provides an opt-out provision.
That is absolutely correct. There is no provision to opt out, to choose whether or not to participate. And again, historically, there have been a handful of students and families that have refused to take the test, and that goes back almost 20 years in the history of the testing program.
I mean, I know it sounds like a matter of semantics, but I think a lot of parents listening to this might be confused. Can they have their children, choose to have their children not take MCAS 2.0?
You know, Meghna, we don't allow students to opt out of certain classes or let them skip out on turning in homework. And the assessment program is part of the statewide program. So if a parent refuses, they refuse. We don't force a student to take the test. But there's not a provision. It's not an optional part of the school program.
Mitchell Chester, are you still with us? Commissioner Chester, did we just lose you there?
Yeah, I just heard a little bit of another broadcast.
Oh, sorry. Wires got crossed there. Okay, so you were saying that it's not an optional part of the school curriculum program.
No more than participating in math instruction is an optional part of the school program, or participating in English class. These are part of the school program. We don't give students a choice of whether they want to take math or not take math.
Okay, so let's get to another major point that Barbara Mattaloni underscored, and I've heard many teachers and educators say also that they just do not see testing as a meaningful measure of student learning, and that fundamentally is their underlying concern or why they wish for a moratorium on all high-stakes testing in Massachusetts.
Yeah, you know, we're assessing in our testing program the learning goals for students in Massachusetts, what students are learning every day. And so schools that have a strong academic program are schools where students are going to do well on these assessments. The results help our children's teachers identify strengths and weaknesses in their school curriculum and their instructional methods. And it allows teachers and administrators to make adjustments to the program of study. You know, I it's important, Meghna, to pull out of the kind of rules-based requirements here, but to go back to the comments that you made earlier, which is that assessment allows us to look at where we're succeeding and where we're not, which schools are on track, which are falling behind, where we invest more resources. And for parents, this is not just about getting a report on how their own students are measuring up against statewide learning standards, but it's important for all students, especially students who historically have been left behind in our schools. And we have students in every school district in the state who have been left behind.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone's arguing with you on that, but you know, as you heard Barbara Mattaloni say earlier, we don't actually need high-stakes testing to tell us that there's an achievement gap already. I mean, How does it further our understanding on what to do to close that gap?
Well, we know which schools are succeeding where others are not, and we're paying very close attention to those schools. We have some schools that are serving high poverty populations that are getting much stronger results than schools that are not, and we're paying attention to the work that those schools are doing. So it gives us an insight into where we're succeeding, and particularly where we're succeeding with populations that other schools are struggling with. It also gives us insight into where we're not succeeding and where we need to put more effort and more support. And we have a very strong agenda in Massachusetts to do exactly that. And it's paying very strong dividends. And I could cite a number of districts. I think case number one would be the Lawrence School District, one of the lowest performing, highest poverty districts in the state 6 years ago, that at this point in time is just making tremendous progress as a result of the interventions that we put in place.
Interventions which will go beyond just the testing, though. Mitchell Chester, and this, we're sort of at the beginning of a conversation about a new era of testing in Massachusetts. I look forward to continuing having that conversation with you and every other person who is much invested in education in Massachusetts. Mitchell Chester is the Commissioner of Elementary and Secondary Education. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be with you, Meghna.
Back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.